So this morning's lesson is called Submission to the Elders. And whenever we use the word submission, it seems like we're sounding negative, like, oh, we're forcing me to give up my say, my freedom and my rights and all those other things like that. And often it carries a strong emotional element. It's kind of like you can say it this way. Well, you can talk about the congregation all you want, but stay out of my life. Okay? It's kind of like when you say, you can talk about money all you want, but stay out of my wallet. Or you could talk about kids all you want, but don't talk about my kids. You know, we get personal and defensive and emotional about that. And some of that may be because we have in the past seen men who are elders who haven't performed very well. Sometimes men who have behaved very badly, okay, in their respective roles, and especially as elders, and that bothers us. And this is what I call sometimes the bad experience syndrome. Now that we have this bad taste in our mouth, it discolors or sours everyone that we see in that position. I get the same thing with preachers. You know, I've heard people tell me to my face, you know, well, I've, you know, been around preachers. There are, you know, a nasty sort of people and, you know, all this other stuff. And it's like, really? Okay, so now I'm part of your past experience and you don't even know me. Okay, so that just happens. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying it happens. So when we talk about this idea of submission, then we understand that there's some baggage that comes with that. I want to tell you that submission is not a bad word, and it is not a bad concept. It is, quite frankly, a necessary one. If we're going to have law and order in our congregations, as well as in our society, or even in our homes, there has got to be leadership and there has got to be followership, which means that we need men who are in leadership positions and we need everyone else to submit to those leaders. That's not because those men are better than the rest of us. It's just because in order for things to be in decency and order, as God wants them to operate, then there's got to be this law and order, or there needs to be this leadership and this submission. Even the kingdom of God and all the universal church of Christ requires submission. I want you to turn to Ephesians chapter 1, for example, in verse 22 and 23, where it talks about Jesus and his role. But notice what's going on here, what you may not have seen before. I don't know. Maybe you did. In Ephesians chapter 1, verse 22, and he put all things in subjection under his feet. That is, and he, God, the Father, put all things in subjection under his, the Son's feet. But in order for that to happen, then the Son had to subject himself to the Father. The Son is not robbing God, the Father. He is not usurping his authority. He is in submission to God, the Father. And he gave him as head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all. You can't claim to be in submission to Christ and simultaneously be bucking the system that is put in place by Christ, even though many do this and they think they're going to get away with it, and it's just not going to happen that way. If you are going to submit to the one who is the head of all authority and specifically the head of his church, then you have got to listen to what he says about this subject. If you don't like the subject, all right, fair enough, but it's a necessary subject. And you've got to submit to him in submitting to your elders. So our submission to the elders is not to rob us of anything. It really is for our own good. All submission forces one to give up something, control, if nothing else. Not all control, but control for a particular context. But ultimately, everyone benefits from that. When we do it rightly, when we do it the way God's told us to do it, we all benefit. God is glorified, the church is furthered and progresses forward, and we all benefit, every one of us who participates in that. All right, maybe I haven't sold this to you yet, but nonetheless, we're on our way. We're going to talk about this subject for the next few minutes here, all right? So we're going to get into a little word study here very briefly. I don't want to bog you down with words and, you know, that sort of thing, but you've got to know what the words mean in order for them to make sense to you. So the word submission and subjection, both English words come from a Greek word, hupotasso, which literally means to be arranged or ordered under something or someone. I give you the breakdown of that. It's a compound word there. Hupo meaning under, tasso meaning organized or arranged, therefore putting oneself or arranging oneself under an authority or a position or an oversight of another person. It's a broad word that has a lot of implications and associations there, not all of them religious. But both the English words are similar in meaning. Subjection and submission are similar in meaning. And Bible translators kind of bounce back and forth when translating from Greek to English. So if you see the word submission in your Bible and you go, well, you know, it says submission, and so therefore that must be, you know, what Jesus said or what Paul said. Well, understand they're probably using the same word that's translated elsewhere, subjection. In most cases, that is the case. Okay? So to subject oneself means, it's really a military term, which means to rank under. It's not about worth of person. It's not about how we value people. It's about authority, okay? There's this rank, and you are ranked under that person. And you accept that situation. It's a military designation. He's the general. You're the whatever else, okay? You're under him. He's in charge. You're not. You answer to him who is in charge. That's subjection. Submission, closely related, but not the same thing. It's not an act of obedience, responding merely to authority. It is an act of willful humility, responding out of respect. It is an attitude more than an obligation, as you would see in the military. In the military, you don't have to submit because you voluntarily choose to do so or humble yourself. You are subjected to that authority because it's there and you can't escape it. But in submission, it's a different tone. It's a different quality. And it does, and that's why the English translator or the translation into English does have a different word, even though the same Greek word is used. It's because, as I've been saying over and over, and some of you are probably tired of it, I apologize for that, but nonetheless, you cannot do a Bible study based only on the definitions of words themselves. You have to also look at the environment in which they are found. That's how you define what the word not only says, but also what it means and how it's being used. Word usage goes beyond mere definition, is what I'm saying here, as I've been saying many times over the last several months, okay? So we are told to subject and submit ourselves and to several different parties in the New Testament, not always in a religious context, but each and every time out of respect for God, respect for His Son, and respect for His Spirit. Basically, God is saying, do this, whatever it is, because it is the right thing to do, and since it's the right thing to do, it's expected of you if you are a child of God. So I'll give you some brief examples here. Here's Jesus subjecting Himself to His physical parents, His assumed father there, and of course, His mother Mary. And there is a matter of authority, okay? Here's his parents, as parental figures anyway, and Jesus, as a child or a youth here, puts himself under that, or at least recognizes that he is not of their rank or of that position there in his earthly youth, okay? Has nothing to do with him as the Son of God. It has to do with him as a human being in the family relationship. There has to be law and order. Jesus respects that, and that's what that's saying there. Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities or those who are agents of the government there. You might look at it that way. Romans 13, verse 1, 1 Peter 2:13 says the same thing, and there is that subjection. We realize the government is more powerful than us. We are a citizen of the government, not a replacement for it, and therefore we subject ourselves to that government as long as the government abides by what it is supposed to do, and in our case, by its own constitution. Another subject, okay. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. Okay, there is a recognition of leadership there. That doesn't mean, wife, you are a lesser person than your husband. It doesn't mean your husband is superior and your wife, you're inferior. It doesn't have no bearing on that whatsoever. It's talking about law and order. The husband is the head of the family, and you're recognizing that you're not the head of the family. That's all it's saying. But you need to recognize that and follow through with that recognition. Submit therefore to God. Very simply, James chapter 4, verse 7. In verse 10 of that chapter, he goes on and says, humble yourselves before God. Well, that subjection, or that submission in this case, and that humility go hand in hand. They're not two different things. He's just saying the same thing in a different way. So in order to submit to God, you need to humble yourself before God, because submission is voluntary humbleness of oneself, okay? Voluntary humility. Here's another one. Be in subjection to such men and to everyone who helps in the work and labors. And Paul's talking about Timothy and Stephanus and Fortunatus and some other names there that you don't have to know there in 1 Corinthians 16 that was read to us. And what he's basically saying is what he says here. There are men in the church, in the church in the big sense here, who are working, who are dedicated themselves to the Lord, to the ministry of the word, and you are to be in subjection to those men. And that doesn't mean you are a lesser person or they're a greater person. It has no bearing on that whatsoever. It doesn't mean you're less a Christian and they're more a Christian. It has no meaning there whatsoever. What it means is that you need to honor those men for what they are doing, and recognize that they have given their lives to the ministry and you have not, and that's okay, but you do need to honor them for what they are doing. And respect them for that and be in subjection to them. That means when they say something, you don't just go, yeah, well, that's their opinion, or something, you know, blithe as that. I mean, you have to honor what that subjection means. Obey your leaders and submit to them. That's in Hebrews 13, 17, which we'll look at more in detail in just a minute. But that word obey, we've looked at this in another lesson already. This is talking about church elders here. That word obey literally means, from the Greek, to put your confidence in or to allow yourself to be persuaded by. It doesn't mean obey like children obey your parents. They're different words. They're different Greek words. Even though the English word is the same, it's a different meaning altogether. And how do I know that? Not only because of the Greek words are different, but also because the context is completely different as well. Because remember, that's how we define word usage, is through definition and context, right? Okay, so if there's nothing else, I'm going to drill that into everyone's head, and we're going to be better Bible students because of it. I guarantee we will if we honor that. Okay, the word submit there in that passage, by the way, comes from that same Greek word, hupotasso. So there is that Greek word coming up again. All right, and then be subject to one another in the fear of Christ, Ephesians 5, verse 21. Out of loyalty to and respect for Jesus Christ, we subject ourselves to one another. My whole point here with this is that submission and subjection is not an occasional or incidental function. It's not something you do once every 5 years or 10 years, or I did it once when I was young and now I don't have to do it again. That's not like it is at all. It is a continual and necessary action. And all who are in the church, even elders themselves, are to subject and submit themselves to someone else. And everyone who is in the church is to submit himself and subject himself to Christ. And Christ himself submits himself to the Father. That's how it has to be. Because God has set it up that way, and that's how it has to be for law and order to exist, if you will, in the church. All right. So let's look at a particular passage, Hebrews 13, verse 17. Because this says a lot, and we want to glean from this. This is talking about elders in particular here. Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account. Let them do so, or do this rather, with joy and not with grief, for this would be unprofitable for you if they had to do that with grief and not joy, that is. This is not offered as a suggestion. This is offered as a command. It implies both personal humility in recognition of the God-given office of elders. There's that personal humility. I need to submit myself to this. It also implies dutiful cooperation, which means I have to have a proper response to this. I can't just say, okay, I agree with the words, but I'm not going to do it. You know, it's not like that. In fact, you know, there are some times when you almost hear these words. Well, I'll listen to the elders, but I'm not going to do what they're going to tell me. I'm just going to do whatever I want to do anyway. Well, that's neither humble nor obedient. And quite frankly, that's merely a selfish ambition under the thin veneer of compliance, just a superficial portrayal of submission. Okay, that's not right. In other words, that's not the right attitude that any of us should have. The elders are spiritual leaders and the mentors and the shepherds of the flock, and they are not to be lightly regarded. In fact, the writer here is saying, in essence, it is offensive to God when Christians carelessly and flippantly shrug off the advice and the counsel, and especially the biblical teaching of the elders. And that's serious stuff, what we're getting at here. We're not just talking about, well, the elders are here, so let's just kind of, you know, get along with them. And I mean, this goes far beyond that. This is talking about our God-given responsibility to these God-ordained men. I don't mean God-ordained in the formal sense, but their office or their position is indeed God-ordained. Since he ordained it through his word, that's how we should treat that. And furthermore, we appointed these men to watch over us and shepherd us, right? So the fact that we appointed them, that should say something about, you know, our respect for them and what they do. And someone says, well, I didn't appoint them. I wasn't here. Most of us probably weren't here when these men were appointed in this particular congregation. But that's not the point. If you have chosen to identify with this congregation, if since their appointment you have become a member of this congregation, then you have chosen also to submit to his elders, or to these elders rather. And if you didn't want to submit, then you should not have identified here. In other words, it's a package deal. You don't become a part of this congregation but snub the elders or stiff arm the elders any more than you can choose these elders to be your shepherds but then not become a member here. That doesn't work either. It's a package deal. They both go hand in hand. If one, then the other. And I am certain that the elders, in essence, bring that to the table anytime they're talking with someone about becoming a member here. That we are the elders, we expect this of you, and this is what we can do for you, right? That mutual working relationship here, but you've got to honor that. And in a paradoxical sense, which means in a sense that doesn't seem to be right up front, but actually it is, we help determine the effectiveness of the elders' leadership by our submission to them. It's very much like you see in a marriage relationship. The wife actually determines the effectiveness of her husband's leadership by her decision to follow him, by her decision to submit to him and to subject herself to that role. Okay? When she does that rightly, and when she does that well, and when she does that consistently, that makes his leadership not just doable, but functional. Now he can function in that role because you're not sitting there, you know, like a dead weight, and he's having to pull you, you know, behind him, which is so often what you see in marriages, sadly, is either the husband or the wife is trying to drag the other one along, and they're kicking and screaming and digging their heels in the dirt, like, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this. And you're thinking to yourself, when you see that, why did they get married? Because they're not even honoring the relationship when they do that. Let's honor the relationship. We have a relationship with our elders, and we are, as the congregation, have a proper relationship with those men, and we are to honor that instead of go kicking and screaming into the relationship. That just doesn't help us, right? So, in a congregation, regardless of how effective her ideal our elders are, we need to submit to the eldership. And if they don't follow what they're supposed to do, I'm going to deal with that later on in this lesson. But my point here is that we need to honor the position here and honor those men who are in that position. But if we're not going to honor them, then we're not going to grow. And I sometimes wonder when I look at congregations, including our own, if we reach periods of stagnation and lack of growth, I sometimes wonder if it isn't because we are not being a submissive group. We are not honoring our leaders, and in particular, we're not honoring Christ. And why should we grow if we're not going to do that? Hebrews 13:17, once again, they keep watch over your souls. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. They're not working against you. They're ideally working for you. Okay? So don't look at this as a negative thing. Look at this as a very positive thing. They have your best interest in mind. You realize that the elders cannot save anyone that refuses to be saved any more than I can, all right? And they can't help anyone who refuses to surrender to Christ any more than I can. And you realize that they can't condemn anyone who is genuinely in fellowship with God either. So it goes both ways. The elders don't have unilateral authority or even sovereign authority. They can't just wade in and say, you're faithful, you're not, you're out, you know, and against what is really going on in the situation. They don't have that kind of control, although sometimes people think they do. And that's just not right. Okay, the elders abide by the same word that you and I abide by, but they are in a different role than we are in with regard to the church government, as I have discussed before. So, like a shepherd to the sheep, they do look out for the flock, and they are supposed to be on guard for us, and that always requires self-sacrifice on their part. John chapter 10, Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, and that means he is a tender guardian, ever vigilant for his flock, and that's what we expect of our elders. That's not a bad thing. That's something that you want. And quite honestly, that's something you should cooperate with. As those who will give account, this goes on to say in Hebrews 13, 17. In other words, since this responsibility is entrusted, therefore accountability is required. Very similar to Ezekiel 33, verse 1 through 9, where Ezekiel the prophet is told that he is the watchman for Israel, and he had better say what God says to his people. If he fails to warn of the judgments or the commandments of God when God presents them, then he is going to be held accountable. The blood of that people will be on his head because he did not say what he needed to say. That is a good message to our elders, as well as to anyone like in my position or a public teaching position. We have got to teach what the Bible teaches. If we don't, then the blood of those who we didn't teach will be on our heads. That's why James says, let not many of you be teachers. It incurs a stricter responsibility, a stricter judgment. Okay? So, elders' work is similar to Ezekiel's, not the same, but similar. If the members are slipping, but they failed to warn or they failed to act, well then, the blood of those members, in essence, will be upon their head. That does not mean that the elders will suffer in place of, right, or be lost in place of. The responsibility is still upon those members. But it does mean that those elders will bear their responsibility or shoulder their accountability for those people because they're appointed for this purpose. The elders don't always only warn of sin, but they also encourage righteousness and edify through teaching and through prayer. And that's why he goes on to say in Hebrews 13, let them do this with joy and not with grief. In other words, as you see on the screen here, don't purposely make things difficult because of your lack of cooperation. And this happens. And the reason I'm bringing this up, honestly, is because this happens. This has happened in this congregation. I'm not going to bring up any historical situations here, but this has happened, where people have made it very difficult for the elders because of their refusal to cooperate. In other words, what the writer is really saying is not all responsibility is laid at the elders' feet. The congregation also has a responsibility to humble ourselves and to submit to that leadership there. So the account that elders may give to Christ for some may be this. Here's the account. I tried to lead so-and-so, but they would not follow. And I offered them counsel, but they would not listen. That may be the account that they offered to Christ. And that's not going to be in your benefit if you're that someone. And the congregation, as well as the person that refuses to submit to the elders, not only are they causing the elders that grief and that heartache and that unnecessary stress, that waste of time and that waste of energy when they do that, but they're also shooting themselves in their own foot, so to speak. They're hurting themselves in the long run, and they will give accountability to God. So making grief for the elders who are following the Word of God necessarily implies that a person who does that doesn't understand the elders' work. They don't understand their own responsibility to those elders, and they don't even understand their responsibility to Christ because they're not giving him his due recognition by following his God-given directives. And there's a lot of misunderstanding there, and it's not on the elders' plate here. It's on the one who's failing to cooperate. It's on their plate. And he goes on to say, that resistance is not going to be profitable for you. If there's anyone in this congregation that is resisting the submission to the elders, I'm telling you straight up, whoever you are, it's not going to be profitable for you. I don't think you understand what's going on, in other words, and how detrimental this will be to you. My counsel to you, whoever you are, is to not only wise up through these series of lessons, but also to repent, because that is a sinful action. And do what you need to do from this point forward. I'm saying that strongly, not knowing who you are, but I'm saying it strongly nonetheless, because it needs to be said. Having said that, I'm also going to say it's not easy to be a leader. And it's sometimes not easy to be a follower. And I get that. There's strong personalities. There's personality clashes, which increase the difficulty. There's also misunderstandings. There's generation gaps. Elders are older men. We've got younger people in the church. They don't understand me. I don't understand them. Okay, we get that, right? That goes both ways. And we have also cultural gaps sometimes within a congregation. People come from other parts of the country, sometimes from other countries or other nations, and they bring with them their culture and their way that they think things should be done, and it kind of clashes with how we're doing things here, and there's personal disagreements we have to contend with as well. So there's a lot of things that make this relationship difficult, but there's nothing that makes it unworkable as long as we are doing what we're supposed to do. Difficulty and unworkable are two different things. So, many have trouble with this idea of subjection and submission because it seems to be a challenge to their personal pride or their control or their ability or their intelligence, perhaps. But the same people, I'm just confident of this, the same people are also struggling, whether they recognize it or not, with their submission to Jesus Christ. And I bring myself back to the real issue of the matter, back to Ephesians chapter 1, verse 22 and 23 that we read, that Jesus is the head of his church, and he is the one who is giving the direction to all of us. And what these people are doing, whoever they might be, is they're resisting their submission to the elders and thinking that's a localized, isolated incident, when in fact it strikes at the very heart of their relationship with their Lord, or in this case, their failure to understand their relationship with their Lord. So the problem begins with that person. They have not yet learned how to deny themselves, which is the first thing Jesus said. If anyone wishes to follow me, what does he have to do? The first thing he says, deny yourself, which means that your self-will is not as important as God's will for you. That's part of being a disciple. And I don't think a person has understood that who is sitting there kicking and screaming, digging his heels in the dirt when the elders are trying to lead him in the right direction. So one who refuses to deny himself automatically takes issue with anyone who tries to rule over him. It's not surprising. It is expected, in fact. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying it's just expected. Okay? And I wanted to look at this congregation in particular. I'm not trying to single out anyone, including our own elders, but I just try to think of some examples here of where our elders have made some decisions for this congregation, their flock, and I'm thinking about our accountability to those decisions, and I want you to think about that as well. First of all, we meet as a group twice on Sunday, once on Wednesday. And if you cooperate with this, well, then that's a good thing, because now you're doing what the elders have decided is in the best interest of the whole group. If you're purposely refusing to do this, well, that's not good. And you're bringing judgment on yourself. Now, I realize there's some exceptions. If you're sick, of course, and if you, you know, are really old, and if you're, you know, just unable to come for legitimate... I'm not talking about those legitimate exceptions. I'm talking about purposeful, deliberate refusal. That's a lot different than lying in sick with the measles or something, right? That's a lot different. And so I want you to ask yourself, what is your attitude or what is your cooperation, your response to what the elders have determined for this congregation? And don't give me the God knows my heart thing, because I understand that. God knows the heart of every person, including agnostics, atheists, and Satan worshipers. He knows everyone's heart, so that's not even an argument. That's just a statement. Okay, so don't give me that or give yourself or anyone else that. God knows your heart. What we're looking at is your actions here, because the actions that you demonstrate is an indication, really, of where your heart is. So I'm asking you, how do you respond to that? Here's another one. Elders expect you to participate in this congregation, if you're a member here, in some meaningful and measurable way. Supporting the preaching, helping to teach, serving as a mentor, financial contributions. And if you're cooperating with those and other things like that, well, that's a good thing because now you're supporting the work of the elders. But if you're refusing to do that for no good reason, well, then that's not a good thing. You're just dead weight to this group. And you're adding grief to the work of the elders. Once again, for no good reason. Which side are you on? What is your response? I'm not here to tell you what your response is. I'm asking you to understand what your response is. If the elders have given you a responsibility as a teacher or some duty during the service or some other responsibility, it's very clear and specific, and you comply and you fulfill that, well, that's a good thing. Now you're helping them. But if you refuse or you just don't care or you just let it slide and think someone else is going to pick up the slack, well, that's not a good thing because that's just a passive disrespect for the elders themselves. And I'll pick on one particular thing that we see pretty commonly, and that's when men get assigned to do things like wait on the Lord's table or offer prayers. And it's all listed in the bulletin. And Randy sends out a thing at the beginning of every month and says, here's your duty. And then men don't show up. And they don't make a call. They don't tell anyone. And I'm sure what some of these guys are thinking is, well, there's other guys that can do that. And you know what? You're right. There are other guys that can do that. But that's not the point. You were asked to do that. You were asked to be in that position, and you agreed to that. But you didn't do it. That's not just a slight against the group. That's a slight against our elders, because they have made those responsibilities available to you for your benefit. I want you to think about this a little bit differently than you might have in the past, if indeed that applies to you. If the elders have asked to meet with you for your spiritual well-being and you comply, well, that's a good thing because they're doing this for your spiritual well-being as the shepherds of this flock. But if you refuse to do that, well, then that's not good because now you're digging your heels in the dirt and they're having to pull you while you're kicking and screaming, right? That shouldn't be that way. And if you say, well, I won't do that because the eldership is incompetent or they're corrupt, well, that's even worse. And I'm going to ask you, if you really feel that way, what are you doing about it? If you really think that the elders are incompetent or that they are corrupt, first of all, why are you here and being quiet about it? Why don't you go to those men with your witnesses, as I'll talk about here in a minute, and get that problem resolved? If the elders give you a specific direction for your private situation, say in your marriage or in parenting, stewardship, personal behavior, these are common areas here, and you take that seriously and you put that into action, well, good. But if you listen to that and reject their counsel because you're smarter than they are, well, that's not good. If you run away to another congregation, and that has happened so many times in my 11 years here, where people have run away to another congregation because they didn't want anyone telling them how to run their life, I have to wonder of those people, why are you a Christian at all if you don't like someone telling you what to do? Because your response to this congregation, specifically to our elders, typifies your response to Jesus Christ himself. So why did you say that you were going to follow him when you're not going to follow the people that he appointed to lead his churches? What I'm doing here is I'm putting into practical application what we're talking about. I do not want to leave this lesson as a concept. I don't want to talk about the word submission. I want you to see how it actually works and, honestly, how it doesn't work as well. But I'm not suggesting that the elders are automatically right in every counsel they offer, which begs the question, what do you do if you know that they're wrong? How do you handle that? If an elder's action or his counsel is sinful, we have a clear course of action, and that is described briefly, but nonetheless effectively, in 1 Timothy chapter 5. Turn with me there, and let's look at that together and see what it says in verse 19 through 21. As Paul addresses that. He addresses that in the negative way at first, like, well, this shouldn't happen, but if it does, right? Do not receive an accusation against an elder except on the basis of two or three witnesses. Those elders who continue in sin rebuke in the presence of all, so that the rest also will be fearful of sinning. I solemnly charge you in the presence of God and of Christ Jesus and of his chosen angels to maintain these principles without bias, doing nothing in a spirit of partiality. Well, the charge of sin is pretty serious against an elder because they are in a leadership position. That changes things to some extent. Because if the leadership is corrupt, it has far more of a detrimental effect on the group than if it were someone else, someone who is not a leader. We see this in the case of Moses. We see this in the case of Eli. We see this in the case of David and other examples in the scripture. It's the leaders who bear more responsibility because they're leaders, which means when you bring an accusation against a leader, that's a more serious charge because now you're affecting the leadership of the group. And if you're just going to go off and say, well, the elders are in sin and you're just one person and you're just making some baseless charge here, and that corrupts or takes away from the leadership of this group, the responsibility for sin there is not on them because you haven't proven anything. It's on you for having said such things in the first place in a baseless, non-prosecutable way. I have to use that word because that's really what this is all about. So make sure that your charge is necessary, that your charge is indeed prosecutable, which means you have evidence and witnesses, and that it's not just opinion or hearsay or your opinion or your belief or your conviction versus theirs. In other words, it's not just a difference of opinion here. It's not just a disagreement. There's a big difference between you and I having a disagreement and me being in sin and you charging me with that. Those are two different things. So let's not charge our elders with sin when it's just a disagreement. Do I disagree with our elders on some things? Richard, Dick? Yeah, okay, we're not in agreement on everything. All right, but I'm not charging them with sin. If I were to do so, then I would bring charges and witnesses and we'd go to them and we'd deal with this thing. That's how it has to be. That's what Paul is saying here. We're never told to submit to sin, and we're never told to submit to sinful men in this respect, sinful elders, okay? But be certain that sin does exist, and understand this, that God is the one who defines what sin is, not you. You don't say something like, I think this is sinful. It either is sinful or it's not sinful. You don't think about it. You don't have an opinion about it. God either says it is or it is not. You can say, I think this is unwise, okay? Or I think this is a dumb idea, all right? You're allowed that. But to say something is sinful or not, that's God's determination. And if they truly are in sin, it says, rebuke them in the presence of all. I understand Paul is writing to Timothy as a man who is in very much my responsibility here as a minister. I understand this to mean that the minister, as the minister of the word, is to lead that, but not the only one to be involved in that. I can't possibly be. And the reason for that is because it is my charge to maintain the purity and the presentation of the word, and in this case, the elder stands in violation of that. And I need to be the one that stands up and says, this is a violation of that. But I can't do that alone. I refuse to do that alone, because then I would be in violation of the word myself. Okay? You see how that works? I hope. And regardless of what we do, in other words, what I'm saying, that needs congregational support. Regardless of what we do, it says do this without bias, without partiality. In other words, don't let our personal opinions or favoritism taint what we're doing, which is so easy to do, as you know. It's just human nature to default to that. All right, so what if an elder is in sin, or not in sin, I should say, if he's not in sin, but you personally disagree with him? And the context then is now in the realm of personal judgment and opinions, not doctrine. You have a right to disagree with the elders and to state your disagreement. You have the right to do that. You do not have the right to what you see up on the screen, be rude or unchristian. You do not have the right to rebel against their leadership. You do not have the right to ignore their biblical responsibility, undermine their credibility, or sabotage the entire congregation. You don't have the right to do any of that over a disagreement. We're not talking doctrine here. We're talking disagreement of opinions. Even though those disagreements may be very sharp and passionately defended one way or the other. You have to remember that the elders are watching over the entire flock. They are not here to watch over your personal views, certainly not your pet interests, or even your private circumstances. They are not catering to that. In 1 Corinthians 12:7, which I've cited before, their interest has to be what the Spirit's interest is, and that is for the common good of the whole group. That's where their interest is. And that trumps all members' personal desires. I'll give you an example of this. For instance, say the elders decide we're not going to assemble at 10:30 anymore. For the common good of the group, we're deciding to change the time to 11 o'clock. And you say, I don't like that. That interferes with my schedule. And you go to the elders and you say that, I don't like this. And the elders say, well, we appreciate that, understand that, but it is in the best interest of the whole group. And you say, I don't like that, but I am a member here, and I can live with it, and I want to honor you men as the leaders of this group, and I don't have to like everything you decide. Okay? That's the right way to handle that. Rather than to say, well, I think you're in sin because it's a scriptural thing that we meet at 10:30. Really? Are you going to go down that road? Okay? Start assigning scriptural to everything that you like and prefer, which a lot of people do, which is a whole nother discussion. It gets tiring and exhausting. Because then you're not dealing rationally anymore. Now we're dealing with emotions, which lengthens the discussion exponentially. Okay? Do you see what I'm getting at? So there's a right way and a wrong way to deal with this. You don't have to like everything. And it's not right for you to forfeit assembling altogether in anger or in spite. Like, I'll show them. I just won't show up at all. Oh, that's mature, for one. And then secondly, that defies your membership here for another. And then that also is an indirect insult to the elders themselves, which is also rebellion to Christ. Do you really want to go down that road? Elders are still human. We're acknowledging that. Therefore, they are prone to some things I have on the screen. Errors in understanding, what they see, how they see it. Errors in judgment, what they decide. They're subject to errors in their bias and partiality. They also, like humans, can get careless and distracted. They also can be, like humans, lazy, and they can procrastinate. I'm not excusing any of these things. I'm just simply saying they can succumb to those things just like you can. Don't condemn them ever for being human. If there's a problem with them, then go to them and deal with it privately first. If that doesn't work, then do what you have to do. But remember this, in Matthew 7, verse 1 and 2, Jesus says, how you judge others, that measure of or that standard will be used against you. Don't judge our elders for something that you're not going to live up to yourself. I made this point at the end of a recent lesson. I'm going to make it again here because sometimes what we have is members in our congregation who themselves are not living up to their own standards of expectation but want the elders to do that. And that is just not right. As you judge, by your standard of measure, it will be weighed out to you, and that applies to how you judge elders as well. Overall, what I'm getting at here is that we cannot obey Christ if we don't give proper submission to those whom he has authorized to shepherd his congregations. Our attitude toward the elders reflects our attitude toward Christ himself. You can't say, I love the Lord, but I just despise our eldership. You can't do that. On the same token, you can't say, well, I love our eldership, but I choose to live in sin. Well, you can't do that either, okay? Neither one of those works there. And I realize there's difficulties on both sides. Elders deal with, you know, people's resistance, failure to respect their position, responsibility. We have congregations who deal with sometimes either militant or spineless elders or awkward personality clashes. Both sides dealing with human imperfection, even in the context of a perfect system. But submission is not a dirty 10-letter word, okay? It can work, it will work, if both sides, first of all, give allegiance to their Lord, and secondly, honor His word for what it is, and not just the parts they like. They need to honor the word for what it teaches, and not just what they've chosen to believe otherwise. And all of this discussion makes it very important when we choose an elder. If we go forward and choose another man to be an elder, we need to choose someone that we voluntarily will subject ourselves to, will submit to. And that involves listening to their advice and supporting their decisions, respecting their responsibility. I have said many times, and I'll say it again, my thought is I may not always agree with our elders on every decision, but I most certainly do support our eldership, even when I'm frustrated with them, even when sometimes they do things and I shake my head and go, what were they thinking? Okay? Dick, Richard, I'm sorry, sometimes I do. But still, but I support very much, and they know it too, I support very much the eldership. Okay? The fact that I'm doing this series is indicative of that support. They've asked me to do this, and I want to do it because they've asked me to do it. All right? So I'm going to leave you with that. I hope this lesson has been helpful to you, and I hope that you do something with this lesson and not just let it go in one ear and out the other. I hope that you internalize the message. If you need to respond to the message itself, the gospel message that is, you need to come forward this morning. This will be the time for you to do so. Come if you need to as we stand and sing the song. It's been selected.